Welcome to the Shine in Sales podcast, presented by Sales Women Training, India's first and only community inspiring women to succeed at selling. I'm Chitra Singh, your host, and also the chief mentor and founder of Sales Women Training. Hello, and welcome to the podcast Shine in Sales. And today we have with us a very, very interesting guest. She's Wendy Harris, and she is called the Queen of Conversations. In fact, she's been crowned the Queen of Conversations by her legions of followers on LinkedIn. She has more than 35,000 followers on LinkedIn, and she's called Queen of Conversations. She focuses on how to have more impactful conversations with your customers, how to create compelling first impressions, and how to grow and build lasting relationships with your customers and prospects. She has over 30 years of work experience, and 17 of them she has spent in building her own business and also in helping other people build their businesses. She's listened to and mentored nearly 2 million people make better and more effective sales calls as well as telephone calls. She's a trainer, an author, a podcast host, as well as a motivational speaker. Welcome, Wendy. We are really very, very happy and excited to have you talking to us at the Sales Women Mentoring community. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much for inviting me, Chitra. It's a real pleasure.
And before we start, I just want to say, tell all the listeners about how I met Wendy. We were both mentioned by Lori when she talked about both of our podcasts in her LinkedIn post. And that's when I decided to reach out to Wendy and have this conversation with her. So I'm really glad that we decided to do this. So let's straight away dive into the questions. The first question I have for you, Wendy, is how were you as a little girl? Were you very talkative? Were you very interested in having conversations? Or were you this quiet little girl who just waited for other people to initiate the conversation and sort of listen to them?
I would say that the initials that I was born with, which was Wendy and Gillette, WAG, suited me from the moment I could start to speak. Apparently, I was an early talker of 8 months old, and all my uncles called me a chatterbox because I was and still am a very curious person. I like to ask lots of questions about how does that work? Why does that work? When will that happen? And one of my fondest and earliest memories as a child was sitting on my little nanny's lap and just having her tell me lots and lots of stories about the family and the war and, you know, what she went through with my dad when she was a young mother herself.
Nice. So you were always a chatterbox and you always
had to talk. Yes, I do believe that it's one of the skills on my LinkedIn profile, just to see if anybody actually checks.
Right. I did see that. And I'm really very delighted to make the acquaintance of another chatterbox who always asks questions, because I was this very, very curious child. And I always had my mom telling me, why do you ask so many questions? I'm tired of answering your questions. So I'm really happy that there are more like me in this world.
Yeah. My dad used to say to me, when I'd go, why? But why? And he'd say, Zed. You know, it was the last letter in the alphabet after Y. And it used to really frustrate me because he just didn't have the answers all the time. But what he did encourage me was to keep asking questions until you ran out of questions.
That's right. So question number two, that brings us to the second question, is how did you start your career and how did you really pick this particular topic of having more impactful conversations?
It started really early on, in fact, Chitra, because at 13, I took a job on the market stalls, helping set up and put away jeans and jackets. So it was quite heavy items to be moving. And the gentleman that ran the stall said, you're not going to be able to do it quicker than that boy who wants the job. So, of course, I did do it quicker than that boy. But spending my Saturdays in the town centre, helping just manage the stall, just got me to be able to talk into strangers. And that's really kind of where I went from working on the market stalls to working in a pub as a waitress and serving meals. And of course, when people are out for an occasion, you'd get to chatting. Oh, was it a birthday, an anniversary? Oh, it's first date, you know. And you just, it was an opportunity to have a little glimpse into other people's lives through the work that I was doing. And at 17, I decided that school was no longer for me, not because I don't believe in education, I really do. It was just that my personal circumstances meant that I needed to leave a toxic home life to save my own sanity. So I applied for a corporate position, which was a telesales position, using the phone to take orders. And that was it. You would just ring round and you would take orders. And it would sound simple on the surface of things, but by goodness, it was way more complicated than that, because you need to make sure that you're ringing at the right time, that you're speaking to the right person, that you know your products, that you know their pricing, that you know the delivery schedule. And there's also the question of, I need something different this week. Can you supply that? So it was a very on your feet thing, and I very fast got a reputation for being able to listen to what people were asking and to be able to deliver for them. So I was their go-to person.
Right. So a lot of interesting things you mentioned here. One is about active listening. The second is about telephone skills, because on the phone, you can't really see the person. And we all know that 55% of effective communication is your body language and how you use your body in order to leave a positive impression. Without that, on the phone, I'm sure it must have been extremely, extremely challenging to get the attention and hold the interest of the prospect or the person on the other side.
Yes, which brings us to another point, that whilst you're actively listening, you also have to command a certain tone of voice. Yes. And that could be that you need to match and mirror, or yes, that you need to take control by changing the tone from the other person. So I would say that actually using the telephone for me was brilliant, because it meant that I only had one sense to rely on, and that was my hearing. So yeah, everything was channeled into really listening and really responding to what was going on in that conversation. So it takes away a lot of distractions that body language, you know, certain personality types can be really busy with their body language. Other people can have no telling sort of signs at all. Yes. So everything that you say really does reflect in what you're saying and how you're saying it.
In fact, the first thing we were taught when we used to speak to customers on the phone, I used to work in a bank, was that you smile and then say, "Good morning, sir. How can I help you today?" Because when you smile, the warmth in your voice, automatically the customer can feel that warmth and that positive energy in your voice.
So well, yes, an exercise. Yeah, if you smile, your back straightens, yes, your shoulders go back, your face and your mouth actually opens up. Yes. So it makes a big difference, your posture when you're speaking.
So I'm glad to know that we had the right kind of training. So I'm sure they were not in your league, but we did have the right sort of trainers who trained us on telephone skills. That brings me to the next question. You did talk about getting hold of the right person at the right time and speaking in the right way to get the right results. You talk about 4R in your LinkedIn posts as well as in your podcast. So can you tell us a little more about this and how you can use this approach in order to grow and build your business and your relationships?
Yeah, well, I think it's really important, because when people start talking about cold calling or telemarketing, which is really the pre-qualification side of things, you've got telemarketing, which is, you know, establishing whether there is a potential or not, and then you've got the telesales, which is more the account management and handling the business side of things. So When we talk about cold calling and everybody rolls their eyes and goes, oh no, not it's going to be another one of those really terrible first impressions. I always remind people that that very first call that you make is not going to be the sale. It's it's about breaking it down into smaller, bite-sized conversations so that there's really no pressure in that conversation for you to achieve anything other than to create a great first impression, to understand more about what their needs are, to see if there is a match for you to be able to offer your help and assistance, because then there's going to become an agreed next step. What is the next step? So when you're talking to the right person for the right reason, then the timing becomes evident. It's organic, if you like. And I can't think of a time in the 30 odd years. Well, I can think of one time in 30 odd years and 2 million calls where somebody said, do you know, I've written that on my list of things that I've got to investigate just this week. But of course, it's still a 6 or 12 month sales cycle before they've established everything that they need to find out. So you need to understand how long it takes for your first customer conversation to sale. And it really just takes the pressure off you and leads you to the right results.
Absolutely. Yeah, I really like that 4-hour approach. It's easy to remember and it's really very relevant. So that brings me to the next question is, how do you choose the questions? Because the first call, like you rightly mentioned, is all about discovery and understanding whether there is the right fit and understanding whether your product or offering can actually match the requirement or solve the problem of the customer. So the questions you ask and the number, I know that there is a significant proportion of the success of the call depends even on the number of questions you ask, because the best performing salespeople ask anywhere between 7 and 11 questions, and the least performing ask only 1 or 2 questions. So what kind of questions should you ask and how many should you ask in order to have a more impactful and effective conversation, which could lead to a close, finally?
That's quite an interesting question, actually, Chitra, because I've not seriously measured that. However, what I can say is that it's all about the introduction of that first question and how you frame that, I think, that will lead to any number of amount of questions. And for me, in my experience and the people that I work with and that I train and share this with, it's quite simple. You know, imagine I've just called you out of the blue today, Chitra, and so Chitra, I'm Wendy, and I am representing a company that, you know, promises to save you lots of time, energy and money. But before I tell you how great we are, I'd like to understand how you do X, Y, Z now. So you can really frame the what it is you're doing, and then you know that you're setting them up for a call of discovery, if you like, but you're putting that person in control of the conversation and allowing them to explain themselves so that you will be able to judge, and this is where your judgment comes in, whether it's the right time, whether there is any telling signs of dissatisfaction or additional benefits or value that you can add to then explore that in the conversation.
Right. So you're saying that there is no set number of questions, depends on the response you get when you first broach the topic and introduce yourself to the prospect.
That's I believe so. And whilst having a set amount of sort of preset qualification questions is really useful to have, I would always encourage you not to have them in a set order, because a flow of conversation is never going to follow a script. So understanding the questions and the points that you need to, you know, cover off in that conversation are worth having as prompts to you know, complete your cycle. But don't worry about in what order that they come.
Absolutely. So take it as it comes, take it with the flow. But most importantly, I think the prospect has to understand who you are, what you can do, and what is in it for them. And most times we do not get to the third part. We're just so busy talking about ourselves and who we are and what we can do as a company and as a product that we forget to tell them what is in it for them, which is the most important and crucial part of the conversation.
Which is why I think that in your introduction, that if you're saying this is who I am and what I'm doing, but I want to understand how you're doing things first, then you're able to get to the heart of what's in it for them straight away, because you'll be able to counter with their situation and say, well, I think this would be a really good time for you to look at this then, Mr. Customer.
Right, because you are approaching it after you understand what exactly their challenge is.
Yes, exactly.
Right. So coming to the last few questions, what in your view are the most effective or the top three tips for having more impactful conversations?
I would say be true to your own personality. Don't try to sound like anybody else. Speak as you would normally. And I would say that if you were meeting friends in a bar, or if you were meeting family for a celebration, that no matter the setting, that you are you at all times, because yes, nothing is going to pull a rug from under you if you are 100% in control of yourself. So that would be my first thing. The second thing that I would say is when it comes to having conversations, just be sure to do your research. And, you know, when people say cold calling or telemarketing and they go, oh, why are they ringing me? It's because they've just worked off a list and they've put no thought or effort behind whether that is really going to be a good fit. So do your research on them. Make sure that the company is likely to want what you get, because quality over quantity all the while. And I would say, see if you can challenge yourselves for your conversations to be more than a minute long. Right. If you can have a conversation that's more than a minute long, you actually are having a two-way conversation and there is information being shared. So that will give you an indication of what your future pipeline is likely to look like as well, and the success of those future conversations in how you set them up.
Right. So you said the first point you mentioned was we should be ourselves. I also remember that you had a podcast with John Follis. And in that, you had mentioned real conversations with real people. So you must be real in order to have a real conversation. So if you're fake, you're following a script and it's clear and evident to the person opposite you that you are being fake, not really being authentic. I think you've lost it. You've lost the connection right in the beginning. So being authentic, I think I really like that. Also understanding their challenges and therefore understanding what is the next step, and having a clear objective for that conversation and sharing the next steps are, again, very, very important for the success of the conversation. Good tips, great tips. And that brings me to the last question. What do you think is the most crucial factor in leaving an impactful first impression? What is most crucial when it comes to leaving extremely good first impressions?
Do you know, I think that if you are authentic and get into the conversation, and if the conversation starts to steer to personal, and you're using examples like the weather, or, you know, like recently we've had Diwali, if you've got an event coming up, that those are the sorts of hooks that make you memorable. I recall a conversation where I'd been trying to get hold of somebody for a very long time, and I actually got to know the lady who answered the phone. And I'd say, "Oh, hello, is that Lisa?" And she'd say, "Yes, it is. And is that Wendy again?" And I'm like, "Yes, I'm so sorry." And we'd have a little chat, and then I'd say, "Just on the off chance, is Mike free for a quick chat today?" And because we'd had those little chats, she'd gotten to learn that I was just persistent. I wasn't being aggressive in any way. I'd kind of explained a little bit about, how useful it could be to Mike. I'd given her a bit of a flavour of what the conversation was about. So, of course, when I did get put through to Mike, he was giggling as he answered the phone. And my first response was, "Oh my goodness, what have I done?
What have I done?
What have I done?" But the way that I approached that was, "Hello, Mike, it's Wendy. It's Lisa just telling you about all our little chats." And of course, that was the icebreaker, and that was what made it memorable. And it was that conversation that led to them not moving ahead at that time, but 6 years later, because it was a 7-year sales cycle on this particular solution, 6 years later, he rang the company that I'd represented at the time and asked for Wendy. And everybody in the company knew who I was and knew exactly how to handle that call. So it just goes to show that it can take a very long time for that timing to be right. And if you leave it on the right note, then, they will find a way to come back to you.
So persistence and patience, they really pick
Absolutely.
up. 6 years is a really long sales cycle. And I think you've hit upon another really very important point for people in sales. Persistence and patience is what pays off. And often we forget to follow up, or we don't follow up, we give up after one or two attempts because we think that this is not going to work. And all of us know that it takes more than five attempts before a deal is closed. And in your case, it took many, many more.
Yeah,
And
and
often it.
I have a system when it comes to follow-ups, and that is, I on initial contact, I call it my three strike rule, and it's three calls. It's three phone calls, and there's usually two emails in between. And I know that my emails and my voice messages are, "This might not be the right time for you, so I do understand that, but I will try again." And it's like, "I'm just trying again to see if I can get hold of you. I'd not heard back off my email. If you'd like to let me know when the best time is, that's fine, but otherwise I will put you in my future calendar." So I'm managing their expectations, and I'm also managing my own. And that is that the timing isn't right for every single person that you look to speak to. So the conversations that you do have are even more crucial to not fluff it up.
Right.
You've got to be really switched on when you do get that conversation, that you're yourself, that you don't You want it, but you don't need it. It's when you can have that attitude of, "I want to be able to help you." It's not, "I need it because I've got targets,"
Yes.
because that approach will come through in your tone of voice and the way that you handle yourself.
Yes. Sales is about transfer of energy and confidence from the seller to the buyer. And every time we are needy and we try to push the sale, I think we transfer that energy to the customer or prospect. And that is
And they
when,
push back. Yep.
that is when things really go haywire because you are pushing and they push back. That's not the right way. You've also talked about picking up the right opportunities and the timing always not being right and always looking at what is possible rather than what is not. I think you mentioned it in the same podcast as what I had talked about earlier, the John Forrest, that often people look at what is not and forget what is on the table. So if a salesperson has a persistence and the patience and the positive attitude to see what is available and what is possible rather than what is not, I think success is guaranteed. So it's been a great, great conversation, and we've got some really nice tips from you on how to have more impactful conversations and create excellent first impressions. We all know that the first impression is very often and most often the last impression, and you don't get a second chance to create a first impression.
That's very true.
I'm sure that this is going to be really very interesting for our listeners. Thank you so much for joining us today and sharing your experience and knowledge with us.
Thank you. You're most welcome, Chitra. Thank you so much.
Thank you.